I'm على الباب. الله 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 إذا طورت للاجني السرائر تدل عليك الله والليل غافر أثبتك التقوى مع الداد والحداد وفي الملأ الأعلى تدق البشائر وكم من فقير بات لاقوت عنده أصبح رزق الله في البيت غامر وكم من فقير وكم من غني
Conversation with Prime Minister Jawaharlal Nehru, now 70, was held out of doors in the formal garden of Nehru's official residence in New Delhi. His guest was Chester Bowes, former United States Ambassador to India and one-time Governor of Connecticut.
Mr. Prime Minister, it's a very great pleasure to be back here in Delhi again and to see you looking well, and to see this very lovely garden at your home. I only wish the whole world looked as peaceful as this does here. It's very good to see you again.
Well, first, Mr. Bowles, you are very welcome here whenever you come. And I'm very glad you've come back here for a short while.
Tell me a little something about your early days. You went to England when you were 15?
I went to England, yes. And I went to Harrow School, and then to Cambridge University. Then I joined Inns of Court, where barristers are produced.
Then you returned to India?
I returned to India, yes. I practiced the law for about 6 years, when Mr. Gandhi dragged me away from it.
Tell me, our people at home are tremendously interested in India. I'm sure you know that, as a people all over the world. And they followed India's long struggle for independence with great interest, and I'm sure their hearts were with you all during that struggle, but people today have forgotten, I think, to some degree, the way that freedom was achieved. I wonder if you'd like to go back a bit and tell some of your first memories of Gandhi when you started to work with him. Some of the experiences of those early days.
Well, you put me a difficult question. Difficult because it refers to how people felt, how I felt during those days of our struggle for independence. And Mr. Gandhi's impact on India was terrific. In a sense, it was gradual for some years, but when he actually came into the All India political field, he came with an enormous splash, not of his own making, and not, might say, of the advertising kind, but something which one felt all over India. He said something that was seemed very simple.
Is kind of borrowing from the poet Gary Snyder, which is the word wild. Wild is a little better because it's immediately already starting from the standpoint of something that's external to the human world, which is really useful to maintain, that there are processes that do exist independent of our influence. And it's important to understand what those are and how they persist and how they need to be allowed to happen. And the word nature often obscures all of that because it's not making the distinction clear.
what sound does is it opens up new possibilities for recognizing what happens in places where we aren't all the time. Like, you know, the kind of durational recordings, a lot of people are doing in national parks to look at distribution of species, birds, of animals, are hugely valuable because in a kind of big data sense, they give you these overarching pictures of the kind of seasonality of a place or the kind of variation across the day of a place. You know, we understand so much of our understanding of sound, or at least our interest in it to this point, has been in such small grabs that it's difficult for us to... I mean, if you sit down in a national park for 6 hours, you will inevitably drift off. Your concentration breaks, you know, you're not really able to hold it, because, like, listening is actually hard work. It's not something that's just a given. It takes a lot of energy to do it, and to do it in a focused way. So I think what some of these, like, techniques that are being developed now are really useful, because people can revisit that material and look at certain events, and, like, there's a way of being able to quantify that experience. I don't necessarily think it's a qualitative experience, but it's a quantifiable one. So I think those recordings, in terms of how they operate as quantifiable data, are really valuable, because they give scientists and researchers and interested parties ways to acknowledge, understand, expand the kinds of bases that they have to draw on to be able to develop theories or research materials or understand species distribution, whatever the case might be. But it's not listening, it's listening in these kind of spheres that reach outward. I guess, like, we're kind of listening into country, and there's a sort of interior listening that happens, there's a kind of bodily listening, which is like you replacing these sort of ancestors, you know, reaching out to absorb that almost like vibrational energy, I guess, maybe, that tells you something that is not necessarily tangible, understandable.
Thank you.
I think what's great about the sort of degrees of listening, when you start to think about Indigenous listening particularly, you know, there can be that appreciation of the, if you like, the aesthetic thing, which I think is what a lot of field recordings within the kind of sonic arts canon are engaged in. But you also have a recognition that there are things going on that have practical implications. I mean, the very best example I can give you is a few years ago, I was in the Pilbara, which is like in northwestern Western Australia, and I was out with an Indigenous leader there, fantastic guy. We were, you know, showed us how to hunt turtle, which I'd never done before. And there was a great moment where we were talking about, I was talking about listening with him, and he said to me, well, can you hear that? And I was like, yeah, it's a wren. You know, I know it's a kind of bird. He said, what do you think about the bird? Do you think it's, what do you think about the sound? I said, well, it's, you know, it's a beautiful call. It's quite agitated. He said, yeah, and what else do you think? And I, you know, described a few more things. He said, that's great. Tell you what I think when I hear that. I said, okay. He goes, I hear that bird is, yeah, like you say, it's agitated. It's aggressive, the calling. And I said, well, it's probably because we're here and we're close to it. He said, well, that's where we would, you know, not agree with each other. I hear that that bird's agitated because, you know, we're too big to be its prey. We're not going to prey on that thing. But what would prey on it is a goanna. And that goanna is my lunch. And I was like, wow, that is listening in a way that is, can appreciate all of the things that I was hearing, but completely reading it in a different way. You know, it reveals, we couldn't physically see the goanna, but he knew that that thing was close and that that could be turned to food if it needed to be turned to food. And I thought that's a phenomenal, that's where the practicalities of listening are so beautiful, that you recognize the capacity for them to reveal something that is in excess of the kind of visual vista that you have in front of you at any one time.
Thank you. than yours. And on the other side, you get this horrible toxic stuff about, well, you've lost your job, blame it on an immigrant. And most likely on a body that's colored slightly different than yours. And on the other side, you get this horrible toxic stuff about, well, you've lost your job, blame it on an immigrant. And most likely on a body that's colored slightly different than yours. The range of political projects we have in most of the advanced countries now are therefore between insincerity and hate. And my God, that should make everybody a little sick.
Thank you.